Oh, hey. It's Saturday, June 21st, 2014. Welcome to summer. We are broadcasting live from Santa Cruz on the central coast of California. This is KUSP Public Radio, 88.9 and KUSP.org. And ladies and gentlemen, it's time now for Geek Speak.
We're through being cool. We're through being cool.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. Please keep in mind that the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP or any of its affiliates, etc., or the places where we work. We're just speaking up for ourselves, is what I'm saying. And who are we? Well, I'm Bonnie Jean Primsch, and with me in the studio today is Lindsay Lonnie, systems analyst and web programmer.
Good morning.
Hey, Lindsay. Also, hey. Miles Elam, a software engineer and political junkie.
Good morning.
And Ben Jaffe, a web development instructor, musician, and world traveler.
Yo.
You start with yo now?
Well, guys, I installed this new app. Apparently there's... Oh, that app, you say. So there is and actually, I have not installed it. Lucky for me. There is an app called the Yo app, and it's taken the world by storm. Unpredictably so, kind of like Twitter. Like, who'd have thought when Twitter first came out? Oh, yeah, 140 characters? Yeah, everyone will do that. No, probably not me, at least. Well, this app, you press a button, and you tell it who you want to send it to, and it sends yo to Bonnie over here, or to Miles, or to whoever you say.
All right, so it's basically like a poke.
That's it. Yeah, it's basically like the Facebook poke button. Exactly. Except it says yo.
All right.
And
who thought of this and why? What for?
It's just, it's crazy how popular this has gotten over just the last week. It got to the top 10 free apps in the iTunes store. I want to read just an excerpt of one of the reviews on the Amazon, on the iTunes store.
Okay.
The subject is speechless. I don't normally write reviews for apps, any apps. There are apps that I use every single day that will occasionally ask for me to review, and I refuse. Why? Because they don't give me the wow factor that makes it worth my time. Sure, they're useful, but not fulfilling. This app is different.
Ooh.
And he goes on to extol the virtues of this app that you press a button and it says yo to someone.
See, I don't know if that's an earnest review or one of those Amazon reviews.
I mean, I think it's one of those kind of goofy ones.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you can't argue with the numbers. It's just unprecedented growth, you know?
Is it just like hilariously simple? Is that why people are taking
really,
to it?
It's really, really simple. Yeah. Yeah. I've just described the entire app.
Okay.
Now, there is a problem, though. With popularity comes, more
corruption.
Eyes on your product.
Oh.
And Yo has been hacked.
Oh.
Wah, wah. Wah, wah.
Now, how do you hack a Yo? You have it say something else instead?
Well, I don't exactly know.
Like,
I mean,
screw you. So that would be terrible.
I know.
Like the wrong kind of poke.
Right. So these security issues, you can if you know how to compromise the app, you can get any Yo user's phone number. You can spoof Yos from any user, and you can spam any user with as many Yos as you want. And you can also send a push notification to a Yo user. So,
that a hack or was that by design?
Right. Anyone who's smart enough.
Free marketing.
This is pretty bad. Yeah.
It's bad.
And they got popular before they got hacked, I should say.
Well, that's how you do it. You get like, no, it's safe. Come on in. First one's free.
Yeah, exactly.
Poke, poke.
So anyway,
I know your information.
It's just kind of a weird story. Like, I just...
Don't trust anything ever.
I've been seeing a lot of people posting these philosophical arguments for why it's so cool because it's so simple and, you know, how communication is so subtle. You can say hi to someone and it can mean a million different things if you're in person. And yeah, I don't know. I can't see it in my life, but, you know, there's definitely people that want to use it. I mean, it's taken off like wildfire. I've been seeing it on every news site this week, but who knows?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was actually just thinking of the onomatopoeia of you send a yo to someone, they send the yo back. It's a yo-yo. And it comes back to you.
It will do a yo-yo if you send it twice. You get a yo-yo on your phone.
You can actually get a yo-yo.
I like it. So I don't know. I mean, from a more philosophical perspective, I do like the idea that the only thing that changes between communication from anyone to anyone else is the person who's sending it, the recipient, and the time. and that's all.
That's it.
The message is always the same.
Yeah.
But there's this incredible, encoded in the context is perhaps some actual meaning there. So,
like, let me have your phone number your other personal information.
Yeah. Or it's akin to the Facebook poke, which was kind of, I had friends very early on send me pokes on Facebook, and I kind of went,
poke you right
okay,
back.
Poke.
Where does it
now
end?
What?
Yeah, and then exactly. It becomes this back and forth. I understand the concept of being like, hey, I'm thinking of you, but I don't want to have a conversation right now. You know?
Or even bother using my own monosyllabic word to indicate that.
How are you?
But I never understood the poke on Facebook either. I don't know.
But then if you don't want to talk and you poke someone, do you feel anxious if they don't poke back or respond?
Like, of course.
Like, I wonder.
Now we're talking about social etiquette.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, what's the etiquette around the Yo app?
And then it's an infinite loop and you're just poking each other.
Yeah, and you keep
eternity.
Poking each other back and forth until eventually Facebook decides that it's a stupid feature and they remove it.
Yeah, you can't poke each other. And then you're like, oh, no, I can't Yo anybody. All right, well, enough about that.
First they introduced the super poke.
Oh, what? Super poke.
Yeah. You guys don't remember that?
No.
On Facebook, they had the super poke as well.
What was the super poke?
I don't know.
I never used it. I remember it. I never.
It was just so that escalation was possible. Poke. Oh, yeah, well, super poke.
You're not going to get me to log in just to see what that is.
So my question is, how are they going to monetize this? Excuse me, this stupid app.
They don't need to monetize it. They can just get your personal information. That's what they're after.
But,
I'm staying on that.
So far, they've raised $1 million from an angel investor. So they got serious funding.
Yeah.
So there's got to be a plan to monetize this in some way.
Maybe dollars it's just from an angel investor. That investor is a sucker. Sorry, angel investor, you've been taken.
Well,
thanks for the $1 million.
In fairness, WhatsApp is a chat program.
Yeah.
Not exactly new under the sun, but they had a whole bunch of users, and they got, what was it, $18 billion for
it? A lot, yeah.
So angel investors probably just going, probably very rich, goes, hey, here's $1 million.
Let's see what happens.
Yeah, that's cool.
I'm playing the lottery anyway, you know.
Yeah, let's see what happens. Just throw it out there.
Yeah, people throwing money around reminds me of the good old days. Maybe it's all coming back, but it's for social media.
Oh, well.
The good old days?
So obviously KSP just needs to turn into a social media site, and then we'll be okay.
Well, speaking of taking out the trash.
Yeah, well, that's a lovely segue. Nice. Nicely done. Work it, Lindsay. Oh, what do you mean, taking out the trash? Whatever are you referring to?
There's an MIT alumni who's talking about solving the world's plastic problem. Plastic's becoming a major problem worldwide.
Indeed.
Like in 2012, the EPA says that the U.S. produced about 32 million tons of plastic waste and only recycled about 9% of that, which that was shocking to me. I thought we were better about recycling. But part of this is because the growing use of non-recycled plastics. It's made of polystyrene and polypropylene.
That's like the foam, the styrofoam type stuff?
Right, and just different combinations of plastic that contain partial bits of that. You know, and there's a whole scale.
And the PET 7 stuff.
PET 7 and above is wah-wah.
Well, not 7 and above. Actually, 7 is the everything else category.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So
7 is 7 and above.
Yeah, so 1 is a particular type of plastic. 2 is a different kind of recyclable plastic. Uh-huh. 1, 2, and 3 are really, really fairly recyclable. 4, 5, 6, not as much. And 7 is like, whatever
else.
Yeah,
this is disposable.
Else.
Just don't even try it.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Okay.
So people throw them in the trash and they end up in landfills and they never decompose there. So landfill space is dwindling, et cetera. Reminds me of a Futurama episode where they launch all the trash into space. Did you see that? That was a good
one. I believe I have.
That would be so expensive.
Yeah.
That would take a lot of petroleum. I don't know where they get all the oil.
No. So what about all that plastic?
So there's an MIT spin out called PK Clean, and they are trying to end the landfilling of plastic with a cost effective system that breaks down non-recycled plastics into oil, and then it reuses some of the gas it produces to operate.
What?
So it runs on a process called catalytic depolymerization, where heat and a catalyst break down plastic into crude oil to sell to refineries. That's not a new thing. I mean, there's already companies doing that, but this one has a unique process, and they do it for a lot cheaper.
Oh.
So about 70 to 80% of the system's product comes out as oil, and then 10 to 20% becomes hydrocarbon gas that heats the system, while the remainder is char residue. So PK Clean last year built and installed its first full-scale commercial plant in Salt Lake City, Utah, and it's been successful for the past year. So now they're talking about expanding globally, and They want to do a little more refining of the output so that the fuel they produce can be used in the trucks that go pick up the plastic.
Ooh.
So yeah. Making it much more, well, carbon neutral, that's not really an applicable term, but...
Right. But it's doing some digesting that the planet itself can't do, which is nice.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
It isn't energy neutral. You're having to burn more hydrocarbons to process it than what you're getting out, but you are reducing the volume of non-biodegradable material and not having it put into the ocean, for example.
And there's a partial assist, I guess, with the gases that are emitted, but that I'm sure that doesn't power the whole thing.
Well, shreds of plastic are put in a reactor, and it runs at about 400 degrees Celsius.
Ooh, that's hot.
And then the catalyst helps degrade the plastic's long carbon chain, and it produces a vapor that runs through a condenser where it's made into oil.
Okay.
And so, I mean, that's part of the uniqueness, but the really unique thing is that it operates continuously. So there's no heat up and cool down, which is where most of the energy
loss
is.
So that does make it more energy efficient.
Yeah, most are batch processed, but this is just continuously run. And then it runs on its own gas for heating, and then it produces the oil.
So
right now they're selling...
So that means someone has to be shoveling the plastic in all the time.
I'm sure they have a conveyor, but yes.
This isn't like 1800.
The oiled sort of smeary chest going, shovel.
Yep. So they're selling the barrels for $100 a barrel for the oil, and it costs about $35 to produce. And it says there's no waste.
And what's oil going for these days, a barrel? Like just straight up out of the ground oil?
I have no idea.
I believe it's over $100 a barrel. Yeah. It's been that way for a while.
It was $135 last I checked, but that was a little while ago.
All right, so it's a win-win-win-win-win.
Well, except for the whole, we're still emitting large amounts of CO2. And
stop using plastic? I guess that's still something that could happen?
Well, given the problem, it's a win-win-win-win-win.
Right.
But ideally, we would not be using non-recyclable or less recyclable plastics or not plastics at all.
Well, it's not necessarily a win-win-win-win-win. Just because,
no, go for it.
Just because,
actually,
as non-biodegradable as that plastic is, that's still a carbon sink that when it gets put into a dump, that carbon is fixed.
Yeah.
And not going into the atmosphere.
Okay. Yeah.
So when you have to process it, you're putting in more greenhouse gases. And then once it's back as oil, you're then putting it into a car to burn as a greenhouse gas.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
So we are
still farting on the planet, basically.
Yes.
Okay.
So instead of using oil to produce plastic and then having that oil not be burned, this is using oil to produce plastic and then having that oil eventually get burned.
Yes.
In cars.
And then the transition processes from oil to plastic, then plastic to oil.
Back and forth forever and ever.
Also doing, the extra emissions and
their losses.
Transfer.
It's
not
an end-all be-all, but it's definitely a step in the right direction, in my
opinion. Something that you can – everything in life is a trade-off. You don't want to do something exclusively without doing another thing. Like you want to have this cost-benefit analysis to say, well, if you do this, then we don't have to do this.
Right, yeah.
If you stop driving cars on oil, then we don't have to build these factories. We don't produce plastics. But
so just think about that. Why don't you? Speaking of trying to go for an emotional charge with people, do we have time to talk about emotional contagion, or should we talk about that after the break?
Yeah, sure. So this is a pretty quick one. So there's this thing called emotional contagion. Like Miles over here, he's, bumming me out with all this bummer news.
There's no winning.
So, like, for the rest of the day, I'm just going to be kind of bummed out.
Well, I just said it was a win-win-win-win-win. It's a win-win-win-lose-win-win.
So, okay, all right. There's a loser next time. Okay.
Well, anyway, an emotional contagion is when somebody around you is either feeling more positive emotional feelings or more negative emotional feelings, and it actually rubs off on you, basically, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're now, like, oh man, my friend was depressed, now I'm kind of bummed out. So as it turns out, this, and I love the word emotional contagion.
Yeah.
It sounds like a disease spreading through.
Exactly. It's infectious.
Well, it turns out that this emotional contagion thing, it can spread through Facebook as well. So they did a
Facebook at it again.
Massive N equals 689,000, like massive experiment on Facebook, and they showed that emotional contagion actually can travel via Facebook newsfeed messages.
Wait, how did they do a massive?
Here's what they did. They they took up a whole bunch of people and they took out certain let's say positive content from positive emotional content from someone's newsfeed.
Yeah.
And then they measured how many positive or negative posts the person made. And they did the same thing with negative emotional content. They took out all the negative emotional content and all of a sudden the person was posting a little bit more positive things.
So they actually tinkered with people's news feeds.
Within the confines of the study.
Within the confines of the study. So people opted in.
Yes.
Tell me people opted in.
Right.
Okay. What's that?
Yeah. So this was done at Princeton. This wasn't like a Facebook thing.
Okay.
But how wacky is that? So, I mean, like, I guess it kind of makes sense in a way, but here it's actually been shown, like, mm-hmm. if you read more positive things in your newsfeed, that'll actually affect not only, it'll affect at least the type of stuff that you post on Facebook.
Okay.
And you can infer that it therefore affects your mood, and the emotional contagion gets spread through the interwebs.
So the next question will be, does posting about a particular political viewpoint inspire other people to start posting with that political viewpoint?
Or the opposite.
Or the opposite.
I was actually thinking this is totally expected, because I think of all the people that post the passive aggressive, this day is the worst one in a long time. I don't know how I'm going to get through it.
Yeah.
You know, no specifics. No actually saying what's wrong.
Either vague booking.
Right.
Yeah.
It's already goes, what's wrong? What's going on? I don't want to talk about it. Well,
why did you tell everybody? Look at me. Don't look at me. All right. Well, listen to us. Don't listen to us. Listen to this. On the 7th Avenue Project, another fine program here at KUSP, are human beings getting more peaceful? The famed cognitive scientist Steven Pinker thinks so. Pinker says civilization really has made us more civil, and though we've got a long way to go, we're not nearly as nasty as we used to be. Pinker makes his case to KUSP's Robert Pauly on the 7th Avenue Project tomorrow at high noon on KUSP, or whenever you look for it, in the talk section at KUSP.org. It's Geek Speak here on KUSP. Rick Philman, by the way, is in the other room awaiting your calls. If you have any questions or comments about technology or the stories we're talking about today, you can call us toll-free, by the way, at 800-655-5877. I'm Bonnie Jean Primsch, and with me in the air room today is Miles Elam, Ben Jaffe, and Lindsay Lonnie. And Lindsay, you've got a geek bit for us today.
I do. Have you heard of the blue apple?
No.
It's chemistry in your CRISPR.
I'm kind of a blue apple.
Blue, yeah.
Yeah.
Is that a kind of apple?
You know, in your refrigerator, you've got your CRISPR drawer. Yeah. You've got fruits and veggies. Actually, when fruits and vegetables ripen, they emit ethylene gas, and it can cause other produce nearby to ripen faster. So it really is like that one bad apple can spoil the bunch. That really does happen.
That's the thing. Okay.
So if you have lots of fruits and veggies and you want to make them last longer, you know, you buy organic and you're trying to do good things and it's costing you some money and
you
want to make sure
that
you use
last.
It before it goes bad.
Yeah.
The way you can do that is by getting rid of some of the ethylene gas so it doesn't ripen things as quickly.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of products in the market that do this in different ways, but I have a friend that does juicing lots of veggies, and she highly recommended this one thing, which is a blue apple. It's a plastic blue apple that you put in your CRISPR drawer, and for about a month, it keeps things from ripening.
Is it the right kind of plastic?
Exactly.
What's this plastic made of?
I just throw it in the reactor when you're done.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
So it uses sodium permanganate, if I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Permanganate,
thank you.
Yeah, make it sound like some sort of mineral.
Permanganate.
Yeah, make it sound like we know what we're talking about.
It looks like a zeolite. Have you heard of zeolite? So it's like a volcanic rock, and they break it up into tiny bits, but it's very porous. And
is
they
it
use
kind
that
of shiny?
It's white.
Oh.
And
oh,
they
it's
use
white?
It. Yeah,
wow.
It's just pure white. And they use it as a carrier medium, and it put it in little gas permeable but water resistant bags, and that's inside the apple.
Oh,
and so after
okay.
they're done, you can just put them in your garden, and the plants love it. And then you replace the little bags, so it does help.
So it's like it's an unscrewable plastic thing. But now, wouldn't the plastic kind of keep the zeolite from doing its thing?
I'm assuming it has little holes in it.
Oh, it's a holy apple.
It's a holy apple.
Your sacred apple's doing the good work for your CRISPR drawer.
Exactly. Chemistry okay. in your CRISPR.
So as a geek bit, there's something we can look at about this?
Yep. I'll put a link up on the website, and they've got all kinds of FAQs, and you can find little videos and stuff
okay,
like that.
Okay, good. So I'll be able to tell if there are holes in this apple.
They have the
what?
Chemistry equations on the page if you want to do Ooh. The chemistry equations.
Yeah, those are not good radio content
yeah.
either.
No. No. All so right. that'll be up on the site.
Okay, so that's it, geekspeak.org after the show. And Miles, you've got a geek bit also, right?
Yes. There's been news over the last couple of years about Apple's campus. It was one of the last big hurrahs that Steve Jobs did before he passed.
Yeah.
Where he went before the Cupertino City Council saying, hey, I want to have this real estate thing go through.
I want a donut.
I want a big donut. And what's been put forward right now is someone has made a 3D rendering of the finished product. Right now, it's still under construction and causing all sorts of traffic jams.
Apparently, it's causing quite a bit of traffic jam construction.
Yes, I just moved. I used to live right on the other side of the freeway as the Apple campus, so I had to drive right by it whenever I wanted to go anywhere. Oh man, it used to take 2 minutes, and it took 7, 8, 10 minutes.
Yeah, but if you want to see,
that's it. I'm moving. Yeah.
It's huge piles of rocks right now. It's not a building.
Right. Oh, okay. And they have to excavate the entire area because
they're going underground?
The parking is all underground.
Oh.
It's going to be insane.
So it's greenery all up on top, and then cars go underneath.
Apple and, trees, perhaps?
Uh-huh. And, ooh,
but
I get it.
Someone has rendered it in 3D and has a flyover video that you can look at, and okay, it shows you exactly how big this thing is because it's...
It's
when you see the photo, you're like, oh, a circular building. But yeah. you don't realize how many stories tall it is and how wide it is okay. until you have that flyover and you see all the other.
You can compare it to a penny. We have a penny in there for scale.
Well, they have human being figures of human beings okay. for scale, so you can see how a human being is in relation to that, and that really yeah. helps.
It's like all a right. nice big city block. Really nice big city block.
Big
city block.
Okay. All right. So if you want to figure out what the new Apple campus is going to look like, you can check it out at geekspeak.org.
Well, except the website is down. So as soon as it comes back up again, we'll let you see that.
Technology realities.
Yeah. All right. So that's a treat for later. That's what
yes,
you're saying.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. How should we get into this? Well, we've talked last week about an auction of bitcoins.
Yeah, the whole Silk Road story, the drug ring online that was busted and everything.
Got like 30,000 bitcoins.
Yeah, because if you wanted to buy drugs with this website, the Silk Road, you had to pay in Bitcoin. And so the Silk Road had a massive amount of bitcoins. The feds confiscated all these bitcoins and then for the longest time held on to them. Like, what the heck do we do with these things? And then last week we covered a story that they are auctioning off all of these bitcoins, like millions of dollars of bitcoins. Mm-hmm. So,
And they decided that they were going to do that auction on July 27th originally.
Uh-huh. So I see a sense of development coming.
Yes, there has been a slight development. Mm. What happened is in the middle of the week, this week on Wednesday, the U.S. Marshal sent out an email to people that had gone to a webpage saying they were interested in the auction of the Bitcoin.
Okay.
They'd sent an email to an email address. The U.S. Marshals collected all those emails and sent out an email that was supposed to have a PDF attachment with information about the auction.
Oh, and they forgot the attachment.
No.
That's what
I do that
I
all
was
the time,
thinking,
that
right?
That would be the great outcome.
Yeah.
This is the not so great outcome.
Uh-oh.
So, you know, you can imagine the people that emailed that were interested. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, powerful business people, and there's also some of the people that probably originally owned the Bitcoin.
Yeah,
that
can I have those
back
please?
people that are really concerned about their privacy.
Yeah.
And when they sent the email out, they put all the email addresses in the CC field instead of the BCC field, so everyone was able to see each other's email addresses. Whoopsie.
So now everyone knows who everyone is.
Right. Well, it depends on the email addresses, but obviously there's a lot of people really concerned about privacy and upset about the whole thing, but they've decided they're going to continue with the auction as planned on the 27th.
Now, who decided? All the people that were CC'd or the U.S.
like,
the US
oh, well,
Marshals.
We don't care.
Yeah. That's fine with us.
Yep. Plow ahead.
Yeah. This is an area where software developers have actually fallen down in general, which is email clients. If you have 100 email addresses.
Yeah.
it almost certainly should not be in the CC field.
Yes. Right.
Like it should be at least prompting you saying, are you sure you want, everyone can see this. Do you want to put this in the BCC field? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. And those prompts are handy because at the very least, it's just kind of like address salad. You have to like scroll past all this stuff to find the actual message.
And it seems like that'd be a very easy feature to implement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like that doesn't seem all that hard. So,
well, which one of you are going to write the U.S. Marshals and suggest it?
Well, once you write it, then you also have to get the marshals to purchase that software and to upgrade to that version and then
actually implement it. Oh, I see. So it could be a moneymaker, Miles.
They're probably using...
Well, no, I was actually thinking in terms of, yes, it's a quick thing to code up, but I think of...
To implement.
Yeah, I think of things like Android where it has a security vulnerability. And then they go to Google and say, hey, there's a security vulnerability. Yeah, I know. We fixed that 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Why are you still using this old software?
Right.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, like, my old machine that's still running XP, if it has problems, I should just pitch it out the window.
Bonnie, you should update from XP.
Yeah, you really should.
You really, really should. Oh, actually, just a word to the wise.
Yeah.
If any of you listeners are using XP, you should update now because Microsoft is no longer supporting XP.
Right.
And so you
know, I do notice my computer's going slower.
They're still updating the browser for a while. That's a small reprieve.
But you know that like some malicious dudes somewhere are sitting on some security vulnerability
they've actually started exploiting.
They have started.
Yeah.
Okay. So basically, malicious hackers could find security vulnerabilities that have not been patched. And then wait until Microsoft stops supporting XP, which they have, and then start taking advantage of that, stealing information, you know, all of that stuff.
If you're running XP right now, you are already a target. Not just before where it was like, oh, Windows, in the past.
It's not even the lowest hanging fruit. It's just you're the target. Yeah. You're the most.
It's not just about me putting up with a clunkily working machine. Yes. It's about... having my
it's about
stuff
you being
taken.
At somewhat of an active security vulnerability
fun
threat,
okay so. Hello, I'm a member of GeekSpeak. Nice to see you guys. Hey, we got a call from Anne in Capitola who wanted to talk some more about the issues of plastics and recycling. Let's see if I can get her on the line here. Are you still there?
Yes I am.
All right, Anne.
I had a question about the recycling. When I heard that when you put two plastics together, they can't be sorted at the dump and used as plastics are used nowadays because they're two different kinds, and so they throw them in the dump. And I wonder why it's not more commonly known that you're supposed to take the cap off before you recycle.
I think that recycling facilities actually do have decapping machines that take all of that stuff off. I think they do. I'm not positive, but...
Well, I'm sort of, my father was into recycling very early in the 50s with paper.
Sure.
And so when my ear picks up whenever I hear something about a dump, it's odd. But I just recently heard that that can't be done. And unfortunately, not only when you put the two plastics together, it floats. So if it ever escapes from the dump or wherever you throw it, that's what happens to it.
Mm. Yeah, it's funny. I actually always leave the cap on, and I always do it as I collapse the bottle so I evacuate all the air.
To save space.
Close it up. Yeah, so you can fit more in the bin before you...
So,
the idea is that those plastics are valuable and can be used, but not if they're joined together.
Well, hold on, Anne. It looks like Ben's done some research.
I just did a quick Google search, and I found that some recycling facilities will decap bottles.
Oh, it depends on the facility.
And some facilities are not necessarily equipped to. So it really depends on what facility. So that really depends on where you live. You could probably contact your recycling facility and figure that out.
Yeah.
I'm talking about
internationally. You know that dumps around the world are not capable of doing that in second and third world countries.
Right.
No. One of the interesting things about recycling facilities that I've I actually did way back when a documentary on recycling facilities, and as it turns out, a lot of times you'll have recycling facilities that are not equipped to handle certain kinds of material.
Yeah.
But they can sort it. And
they
so they'll sort
it,
it into these bins, and then they'll send it down the road to this other recycling facility that's equipped to handle glass. And then that recycling facility sends them all of their, you know, three plastics or whatever it is.
So even after you throw something away, it's still acquiring miles.
Yeah, so all hope is not necessarily lost, but I'm sure there are many situations in which if you leave caps on bottles, then they can't necessarily recycle it at particular facilities.
But it's a good heads up, Anne, for...
Talking about take it off, take them all off.
Yeah, it's probably a better idea, come to think of it.
When in doubt, right? You could do that, but you can also check with your particular facility, everybody out there, and see how they handle it.
Like everyone's going to rush to the phone and find that out.
Yeah, right.
So it's just easier to take the cap off and not worry about it.
There you go. Also, clean your plastics, right? Because having all the food particles on there.
I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the bobbing around in the ocean was very much a visual. So.
Yeah. All right, Ann, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
All right, cheers.
Bye.
Yeah. Also, as it turns out, so she brings up a very good point. Mm-hmm. Like, who's going to really go to the phone and call up the recycling facility? And even if everyone did, would they be able to handle that call volume? Probably not.
Probably not, but they do send out brochures.
They do send out brochures. And so, like, if you can't figure out that information, that's great. Other than that, there are general things like, decap the bottles. Don't put pizza boxes in the recycling. A lot of recycling facilities can recycle pizza boxes just fine, even if they have a moderate amount of grease on them. If you say, oh, yeah, pizza boxes are fine, then some Joe Schmo is going to put a box with a pizza in it and toss that in the recycling.
But it's about the oily residue, right? It's about the food particles on the cardboard.
It's about having a lot of food particles versus maybe just a little couple.
Okay,
so.
Like a little.
Yes, it's just interesting. The broad strokes target the majority of the people. And then if you're interested, go check out the specifics.
If you want to get really involved with your recycling, you can. Lindsay, did you want to say something about that?
There's a pizza place in town that uses that corrugated cardboard underneath the pizza on the bottom. So you just throw that part away and then you can put the box in the recycle bin. So, hey, pizza places, start doing that for us.
Yeah, I like
thanks, because we do want to recycle those boxes. Speaking of putting things to good reuse, IKEA hackers, what's that, Ben?
Oh, IKEA hackers. I love this site. So I discovered this site when I discovered this story, which I'll detail in just a moment. But first of all, what is IKEAhackers.net? Apparently, it's a website where people will submit or people will post different hacks that you can do with IKEA furniture. So IKEA furniture is so ubiquitous. So many people have the same exact dresser or the same exact bedside table. So what can you do with those things other than using them for their obvious intended purpose? Well, it turns out you can actually do a lot of things. Like, for example, I was looking around and I found an articulating table mount from the Tertio lamp at IKEA that you can attach an iPad to. So you can lay down on the couch and have this iPad floating above you.
Oh, that's nice.
And you don't have to hold it up all the time.
Yeah.
It's a kind of a cool idea, right?
That sounds fun.
So basically this site details how you can use these different pieces of IKEA furniture for all sorts of interesting different things. And IKEA furniture is cheap, too.
I would think, like, if I were IKEA, that'd be kind of exciting. Like, oh, we found another way to sell our furniture for makers.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's what I would think, too. But it turns out up until June 14th, on June 14th, IKEA hackers, they published a blog post that says, a bit of bad news. IKEA sent them a cease and desist letter, and they went back and forth and everything, and they worked out an agreement where basically the guy who runs IKEAhackers.net can't advertise in any way on the website. Otherwise, IKEA will basically sue him, right? Otherwise,
they're worried
he can
about
keep
him
it up,
making ad revenue off of using the name IKEA?
The name, yeah, that's kind of
it's a
what
diluting
it comes
of the
to.
Brand. For trademarks like IKEA, they need to enforce it to say, like, this belongs to our brand. As soon as you have other entities that are in the commercial space, that are ostensibly in the same commercial space because they're making other furniture, making other hacks that directly compete, even though they're a recycled aspect to it, then you have a dilution of that trademark, and it's harder to enforce.
So like, IKEA has to defend it.
Yeah, I think in our current litigious society, and also with regard to how trademarks work, IKEA may be forced to do this.
Yeah, so
but
so
they
that's
could
kind of a
make money off of people like buying their furniture just to hack with it.
Yeah, but it's a different space between like what you're doing with your products and people buying your products and making money that way versus defending intellectual property. It's like a totally different space, and it's a really weird space.
And it's a name. If you named it as
modular Swedish furniture hacks. Mm-hmm.
Right, exactly.
Probably would work out better. Probably would.
That would be probably just fine.
Yeah. Yeah,
so it's about the brand name, absolutely. Okay. And so basically he posted this blog post on what was that date I said? June 14th, June, right? Yeah, so yeah, that was just what, 7 days? That was a week ago.
It was a week ago.
And a bunch of people who use the site contacted IKEA and said, wait a second. This is cool. This is so awesome. And it's good for you guys too. And please don't make this site shut down.
Yeah.
And believe it or not, they actually reached out to him, and a real person IKEA reached out to him, and a real person called him. And they are chatting right now about like what's a better way to go about this.
Oh, I'm so glad. Just talk to each other, people.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, I mean, now we don't know whether this is going to result in IKEA hackers hanging around like it has been. You know, maybe there'll be some other agreement that they end up coming to. But yeah. That's at least the feel-good portion of the story. In other news, go to IkeaHackers.net right now and check it out. It is so cool. It is so neat, especially if you have IKEA furniture. Yeah. Like you build a standing desk with, you know, this and this and this piece of IKEA furniture stacked on top of each other in this particular way. It's just, How cool is that?
I'm so curious. I want to go there and check it out. Listen, we got another call from Susie in Salinas. It looks like we effectively set the alarm bells by talking about XP. So let's see what Susie has to say. Hi, you're on the program.
Yes, hi. I did hear about your XP, and I knew that it had been, the support had been stopped in April, basically.
Yeah.
And I'm just saving my money up to get a new laptop. But I was curious about, and I knew, you know, I was vulnerable and all that. But let me just say, I don't open my email. I check it, but there's only been two or three that I had to open, and then I closed it immediately. And then the other one was, I don't order on Amazon anything. In fact, I had them take off my MasterCard that was online.
So it sounds like you're doing some
and
things.
No more things. I don't go into my online bank account. I just never have because of, you know, I just don't want to go into it. So I basically just search, you know, surf on the web.
And is that enough to protect you? Is that your question?
What browser are you using?
My question is, you know, am I still vulnerable to something that I don't know about?
Good question.
Well, one, yes, you are vulnerable.
Yeah.
It's just, if you're running XP, you're vulnerable. There's no way to really sugarcoat that.
Yeah.
At the same time, what web browser are you using?
Google
Chrome.
You're using Chrome. It's okay.
Is that better?
That's better.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm on Firefox too.
That's great. That's fine too. As long as you're keeping them up to date. Yes.
Yeah.
So that you can definitely mitigate your risk in that way. But you're still definitely a target because, I mean, there are vulnerabilities. So we're talking about security vulnerabilities where theoretically there could be a vulnerability where just having your computer connected to the internet, someone would be able to somehow find their way in and weasel their way in. Another thing is any information that has ever entered your computer, whether that's a credit card information, any credit card information, if you logged into your bank once but you haven't done it since, theoretically that information could still be on your computer. So the mindset I would take is anything that my computer ever has known could potentially be at risk. And if you think about it that way and you have a computer where literally the only thing you do is check stock prices and that's the only thing you've ever done, then you're probably not at much risk with regard to that particular computer being compromised.
Right. You're not at risk for your data being compromised, but you are at risk for having your computer hijacked.
That's true.
That's a very common thing that is referred to as a botnet or a zombie PC, where someone will get control of their computer and the idea is that they're going to use it for their own purposes, unbeknownst to you. And in fact, one of the only ways that you would ever be able to tell that anything was wrong would be because your computer seemed a little bit slower or
I think that's what some of mine's a zombie
or more specifically...
Susie, I think I'm in trouble. I don't know about you.
Your internet connection may end up seeming slower because there's all this extra traffic going through.
Right, yeah.
But it could be...
Because of what?
The extra traffic, some remote person using your...
What many botnets...
You know, it's always been slow because it was actually a refurbish when I bought it.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, it was a... it was an okay refurbished. It was from a company, and I trusted them. So.
Right. Yeah. So, Susie,
you know, because it's so old, it's always been kind of slow, you know.
Right. So you're looking at a new machine. That's what you want to do.
Yeah. I'm definitely going to be buying one. Also, what I was going to do when I got the new laptop, I was going to change. You know, obviously, I'm going to change all of my passwords.
Mm-hmm. Good idea.
I think it's a good idea. Anything else you might suggest?
Make sure those passwords are different from each other. Especially between.
Oh, absolutely. I have them all different now.
Okay. Wonderful.
I did that way.
Good for you.
You know, keep them in a little booklet, right? And just have them nearby.
Are you using Outlook for email?
No, I'm using Google.
Okay. That's better. Less likely somebody will get a hold of the address book that's stored on the system that way.
Oh, nice. Okay.
And this is a general note for folks out there. If you're stuck, like you're trying to save up money to get that replacement computer because I realize a lot of folks, it isn't just a matter of like, oh, I just don't want to get the computer. It's like, come on, it's money.
That's money, yeah.
Definitely.
One thing you can do is look at the used laptop market, for example.
Well, that's what Susie did the last time.
She got
it refurbished.
Yeah. Well, yes, but...
Yeah, and I got it for real cheap, but now I want to get something decent and, you know, yeah, I do have... I'm very close to getting it now. So,
okay.
Yeah, so just change my passwords and just look at my bank statements and, you know, whatever. I don't have any money, so, I mean, what else are they taking? My identity, I guess. You know,
they can be using your computer to attack someone else is really another big danger. Whenever you hear about some website has been taken down because hackers are trying to take it down, it's because people's computers have been hijacked.
Yeah,
and like they're using them en masse to attack someone.
So it's not a direct hit to me, but somebody else.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Or sending spam. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, well.
Good luck, Susie. Okay.
Sorry we don't have much good news for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
But on that note, guys, Anna has a question in Santa Cruz about, well, now that she's got a new computer, because, XP, no, what about transferring the programs? Is that right, Anna? That's what your question is?
Well, basically, and anything else along those lines, I haven't used my XP to go online. I disconnected it from the router where you go online.
Uh-huh.
And so I only have been using it for documents. But it's gotten so slow. I don't know if there's any risk because being it's not online, I can't update any of my McAfee or the other virus.
It doesn't matter. It wouldn't help you. I don't mean to be
now that
really
I just
pessimistic.
Got this new computer from Grey Bears. Yeah.
Yay.
plug for them.
Grey Bears recycles electronics.
I would have to go online to transfer. Or I don't know how that works. I've got my files pretty much in my thumbnail, but in terms of programs,
you're wondering how to safely transfer the stuff from your old computer to the new computer without further fargling things.
Yeah, or anything that I'm not understanding about that.
Well, we've got three geeks kind of looking up at the place where all the information is in the sky.
Well,
it's always been a hard problem migrating from one Windows machine to another with all of your data.
Yeah.
So they've supported things like in-place upgrades of the operating system, and that usually is the easiest way to go. But most people buy a new computer, and then you have to transfer it, and it's...
Is Dropbox a thing? That means she goes online, though.
Yeah, I mean, she goes online, and it depends on how much information she has. If you have a whole lot, it's going to take forever to upload it to an online cloud provider and then download
and
it back.
I'm talking more about programs. My
software.
Documents aren't that problematically. I'll fit on my thumb drive.
Well, in terms of migrating over, migrating is probably the wrong word for this, but in terms of getting the applications that you want onto your new computer, there are two situations. One is with free applications. So if there are any applications that you're using that are free, I would just install them from their particular website and go that way.
Yeah.
If you have any websites, if you have any programs that you've paid for, maybe you can find the installation disks. Maybe you can go on their websites and download an installer and then use the serial key that they may have given you. Generally, transferring applications, you don't tend to do that as much from computer to computer.
Yeah, and if you're moving from an older computer, a lot of times that software was a few versions back.
Yeah, so the newer version might come with the new computer?
Well, the newer version will work better with the newer computer.
Uh-huh.
The
we'll
older
work
one
with
you
the
have
older
a...
documents, though, that's the question.
And
no, the older documents
be okay.
will be, yeah.
Okay.
So So I have to find a way to get the newer version. You have to pay for the newer versions then.
Normally, just find out what comes with the computer first. And say,
What type of documents are you talking about here?
That's the Graybeard's computer.
She said she's not that worried about the
It's new to you, but
Well, I know, but you're worried about the applications to load the documents. What type of documents are you talking about?
I can see the documents, but like my printer is set up where it's also wired. It's wired, but it's also wireless to my laptop. And this is a desktop. I got Graybeard's. And so if I just reinstall the same software in the new desktop, it seems like there's going to be a problem then.
If you're talking about the printer software, or if maybe it's a printer scanner or something like that, any of that software, what I would do is go online to their website.
Right.
That software, you're not going to have to pay for that software. That software is going to be a free download. The thing you pay for with a printer is the hardware, the actual printer that sits on your desk.
So the drivers are free. They're included.
Mm-hmm. And you're definitely not going to want to try and get it from the old machine and bring it over because it may not be compatible. There's probably going to be a new up-to-date maybe even with some security fixes version of that software. So that would fall under the first situation, the free software you can go and find and download. So.
Yeah, the printer part of the equation is actually one of the easier parts of that, what you're talking about.
So are there anything that I don't know how to ask the right question for in terms of the XP old to the new computer?
Yeah, well, I think that you probably have a good handle on it based on what we've already talked about, the main things. And then any other things, at least if the show's not going on, if it doesn't have to be 10 o'clock to 11 o'clock on Saturday mornings, Google really is your friend with this because there are so many people in the exact same boat as you. And so there are going to be a lot of free resources online and blog posts and things like that.
Just and software that will help with migration.
Yes, that's true.
It is out there.
Yeah.
And can you give me an example of software that would help with migration?
You know what? Can you write us at geeks@geekspeak.org after, and we can, if we have any resources, we can send them to you over email. We need to move on with the show, unfortunately, Anna.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, though.
Wonderful. Thanks.
Thanks. Bye-bye. It's Geek Speak on 88.9 KUSP. I'm Bonnie Jean Primsch in the air room with Miles Elam, Ben Jaffe, and Lindsay Lonnie. And one thing that Lindsay and I caught our eye on this week was this thing called Spritz, which is a speed reading application. I thought, well, why do I need a speed reading application? But it's actually quite interesting. Rather than you moving your eyes over the words, it moves the words in front of your eyes.
Like a word at a time.
Like a word at a time, and there's like a little red letter where you're supposed to sort of focus your eyes so that you can kind of grok the whole word. And if it's a super multisyllabic word, they'll actually break it up into a couple parts. Mm-hmm. What was your impression of it, Lindsay?
I was surprised how neat I thought it was. A friend of mine who's a teacher was talking about it a little while back, and I thought, how can that be that great? Yeah. And I went and watched the video after you sent the link out, and I was impressed. You know, they demoed how you can do 200 and then 400 and then 600 words per minute.
Yeah, you can
and
go
then
pretty
once
fast.
You go to 600 and then back it down to 400, it feels more natural.
Yeah.
And it'd be great for things, you know, like emails, and now they're going to do all the wearable stuff for reading.
Right. Well, that's the thinking is when the screens are getting smaller.
Yeah, like a smartwatch. I mean, how are you going to fit?
How are you supposed to even read an email or even a tweet, you know, on a teeny tiny little smartwatch?
you just yo people.
Yeah, just yo. Yeah, just send one word back and forth and then take their information. So this is going to be a way that the wearable tech like the Google Glass and the smartwatches and so on can actually be usable when there's text to grok.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a really interesting space. I mean, all of our basically the form factors of all of our devices are changing dramatically. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got big screens, we've got huge screens, we've got teeny screens, we've got really teeny screens, we've got watch screens. So like the paradigms of interaction are changing, right?
Yeah.
Both in terms of how you input information, like for example, there's a keyboard called Swipe where you just drag your finger along the letters on the keyboard
that
you want
to input.
Yeah, it's kind of strange, but once you do it, you're like, oh, this is a new paradigm, but it's interesting.
I wonder if it leads to more accurate spelling because I am just like it's like I'm using just a ham hock to type with. I can't seem to spell anything right.
It's funny. We're going from one finger typing to full fingers typing to one finger swiping.
Yeah. Yeah. What's next?
I don't know.
And the Spritz thing, they're releasing an SDK because before it was proprietary and nobody knew how they were going to start using it. So they're releasing a developer kit and shipping it out in stages.
Oh, nice. Yeah. So people will be able to play with it and use it to to embedder things.
Build apps, yeah.
Embedderate.
Put it into your mobile or app or whatever, your website. Yeah.
So we're going to have a link to the Spritz website so you can kind of see what that's like, reading super fast per minute.
Mm-hmm.
That's coming up here. And so you can go to geekspeak.org for that, which was where you can find out about this or any episode of the show. Thank you for listening to Geek Speak. This is a registered service mark of David Lawrence and used with permission. And we're Creative Commons Attribution 3.0, so use our stuff any way you like. Just tell them the geeks say hi. This has been Geek Speak for June 21st, 2014. Thank you for listening.